Welcome to Kidney Talk, a program of Renal Support Network, a show that streams health, happiness, and hope to the kidney community. You can download all Kidney Talk shows from iTunes and find a variety of resources to help you navigate this illness at rsnhope.org. Please welcome your host, Lori Hartwell, who has lived with kidney disease since the age of 2.
Well, welcome to Kidney Talk. Today, we're going to be speaking about a topic that I think everybody needs to know about. It's about home dialysis success, some tips and strategies you can do if you decide to do home dialysis. I was on peritoneal dialysis, I was on home hemodialysis, and I always chose to be at home if I was on dialysis. Of course, kidney transplant has always been my treatment option, but hey, you got to know them all and pick the one that's best for you. Today, we have an expert in this topic. Her name is Dori Chattel, and she's the executive director of the Medical Education Institute. So thank you so much, Dori, for joining the Kidney Talk.
I am so thrilled to be here, and thank you so much for asking.
So we both are on social media. Where we've been doing this a long time, Dori. And
I wish I had remembered when we met.
Isn't it crazy? I mean, I'm like, oh my goodness, since the 90s, you know? And I don't know about you, but I feel like I have answered the same questions over and over and over again. If we could get a dollar for each time we've answered the same question, we would be, you know, well set for our future. And I think one of the things that often comes up is people talk about what's not going right with home dialysis sometimes, but they don't always understand how can you be successful at home dialysis. So why don't you just kind of give a quick run through of modality choices for home dialysis?
Okay. I actually want to start even one step before that, which is before we even talk about what modalities are there. The thing that I think really predicts success is whether people pick an option that fits their lives and their values and where they are right now and where they want to be. And that's a step that I think gets missed too often. And what a lot of folks do, and I've done this myself. I mean, you know, I've been in this field a really long time. And eventually I learned things. But figuring out what matters to you and what brings you joy in your life and what makes you want to get up in the morning and what you miss doing whatever option you're doing now, whether that's, you know, you miss having a pet or you miss getting to eat what you want or you miss getting to work or travel. Once you figure out what those things are that you really value and then you make a choice of an option that lets you have those things, you're way more likely to be successful.
That's a great point. I mean, when I started PD when I was 14, I really didn't have to worry too much about my fluid. PD just sucked it right off of me as fast as I would. I mean, I wasn't a big drinker, but it was true. When I was on in-center hemo, I had to watch every ounce. And I know having the ability to be a teenager and be more free with my fluid, I'm sure was better for my quality of life and my health because I wasn't getting fluid overload.
Exactly. That makes sense. But, you know, it's not even just kidney disease where we sort of fail to do this systematically. Really, medicine isn't about what you want your life to look like. Medicine is about you have this disease, we're going to treat it with, you know, you can make this choice of this, this, or this. But the choice is so important, and knowing what's going to fit your life best is important. So we did build a tool to help people do that, and it's free online. So that's mydialysischoice.org, and it's in English and in Spanish. So I encourage folks to use that. And not just people with kidney disease. I actually really like when renal professionals use that themselves, and they think about, well, what would I want if it were me?
That's a good point, because oftentimes if you ask somebody cold, well, what treatment option would you choose? And they always say, transplant. And I'm like, well,
right?
That's not an option right now.
That's what I would want. But
yeah,
the sort of tricky piece of this is that it can be really hard to figure out, you know, well, what would be the best fit? So that's where the tool comes in, and using that makes a difference. What took me forever to learn, because I'm apparently kind of a slow learner, is that when you ask somebody, you know, which of these treatments do you want? The real answer is none of the above. I don't want any of these treatments.
Exactly.
None of them. I want this to not be happening. I want my life back the way it was.
Right. Do you want a shark attack or do you want a killer bee sting? What do you want?
Exactly. I mean, it's yes. Would you rather be lit on fire or pushed off a cliff? I mean, that's
exactly what
we're asking people without realizing it. And until we really realize that, we're not going to make any progress forward. So now that we've sort of given this some thought and we can help people match what will fit their lives, well, then it's not so much, I don't want any of the above. Well, I want the one that's going to let me swim, or I want the one that's going to let me have a baby, or I want the one that's going to let me, you know, go to Europe.
And I think it's so important because I think once you have the serious diagnosis of just, okay, you're going to need dialysis and hopefully you have some time, you're not crashing into emergency room. But it's hard to kind of visualize what your future would look like with such a serious chronic illness that requires so much maintenance. And for me, it's really helpful when people around me kind of help me, remind me that, you know, you're going to get through this and remind me about the things that I love and that I'll still be able to do them. Because sometimes you have a little self-identity crisis.
Absolutely. And one of the most important learnings that we got from some of the early research that we did is that this feeling of I am still me, regardless mm-hmm. of what my health is really powerful.
Well, if you don't have a reason to get up in the morning, that's my little test for depression. What are you looking forward to? And if somebody says nothing, you kind of can gauge that they are pretty sad. And I know a lot of people who've been successful with dialysis is like, oh, I got this to do, I got that to do. They have a lot of reasons to get up, like you said, in the morning, because this illness can be so difficult. If you don't have a strong reason, it can be easy just to kind of lay there and give up. And unfortunately, that's just a reality that I've witnessed.
You were, I think, the first person in this community to really get the message out about how important hope is. And we have sort of taken that beacon and tried to run with it, but you were right. You're still right. And I don't think anything is as important as hope.
And we really thought about that in our, you know, after 20 plus years of doing this. And I'm like, you know, I want patients to have hope, but I also want them to flourish. You know, you can have hope and not do well. So let's try to take it a little step further. So, we say that in our board meetings and, you know, how can we just make people flourish? And I think it's great about this tool because it really does encompass not in addition to just having hope, but actually to flourish with the illness. And that's very important.
That is the goal. And once again, you are leading the way.
I know, it's a little hard. People are slow in this community, Dori. I hate to tell you that. But
right?
You know that. I'm like, come on, I had
what
this idea 20. I mean, I was talking about fluid management in the mid-90s, and I'm like, oh my goodness, they're just catching up. Okay, anyways, that's another show. so I hit my head on the wall. Just listen to me, and everything will be perfect, right?
Right.
I thought I was wrong once, but I was mistaken. So maybe you could quickly go through just the home treatment options, because I think people think there are only two, and sometimes they forget one of those.
Yeah, one thing that I find it really surprising is that a lot of folks, even clinicians, are not really thinking in terms of the full scope of dialysis options that are out there, because there aren't just one or two, there's actually seven. So there's peritoneal dialysis, you know, where you put a tube in the belly or in the chest and down into the belly, which a lot of people don't know about, and that's kind of useful if you like to take tub baths. But peritoneal dialysis can be done either manually, and I think that's how you did it, or did you use a cycler?
I did both. I was actually the first child to ever go on PD in California, so the cycler wasn't around at the time. So
oh
I was
God.
On the manual PD for 3 years when they had the spike connections and the betadine wraps. And, you know, I'm one of those people, I'm like, you little whippersnapper, you didn't know how hard it was when this first started. Like, you know, you don't know how good the machines are and the connections. Anyways, that's when I get, like, you know.
At least you didn't go back to the days of glass bottles for PD fluid, right?
Oh, well, then they came out with the Travanol machine, and it was a cycler. And, you know, I love that because I felt I had the best of both worlds. I could be on the cycler at night, but if I needed to do an exchange because I had to shorten my time at night because I worked and lived alone and had a boyfriend and trying to manage life because I had a lot of reasons to get up in the morning and a dog. I, you know, sometimes couldn't dialyze the 10 hours a night. And so I would do an exchange at dinner and started early. And my doctor was fine with that. I don't know what medical practices are today, but I was on PD 9 years and doing that combination to make the treatment, as you said, work within my lifestyle, because I never wanted to resent the machine. And I would, I remember one time, because I lived in a studio apartment, and I would sometimes put 2 extensions on me because I wanted to watch videos on the weeknight, like with my friends. So I would get on, I know, I'm a total, you know, but I would do that. I would put 2 extensions so I could watch videos with my friends and go on dialysis. And you know, I always share this story, is that my doctor at the time was a little skeptical. You're going to risk infection and, you know, all the different aspects. And then my PD nurse was wonderful. And she would say, why do you want to do it? She would always ask me, why do you want to do it? And I'm like, you know, I want to live my life. And this is a way I've figured out. And, you know, Jean and Linda, like, just empowered me so much to make decisions. And I always ran it by them. But, you know, I just think about how they worked with me and helped me problem solve and make the treatment work within my life. Because at the time, I had my second transplant at 17 that didn't work and was told I would never get a third one. Right. And you know, that obviously things change. I got one when I was 24. But to think when I was 18, 19, I'm going to be on this machine the rest of my life. And I'm so glad I was young, because if it happened to me now, it would be a little bit harder to take. You know, you have a little bit more self-realization and, you know, you think you're a little bit more destructible than when you're younger. But I think about that. And, you know, Jean and Linda were basically doing exactly what you're trying to do with this tool. Like, how do you make the treatment work within your life?
Right.
So kudos.
Right. That's the critical. That's the critical thing, is to try to figure out a way to make that process easy, you know, so that, you know, because we based that tool on literally 600 different references that we had looked up in when Dr. John Agar and I were working on the book Help, I Need Dialysis. You know, we wanted to turn that book into an interactive tool. I was like, well, nobody else is going to sit and read 600 references. We got to make this easy for people. So that was the idea. Yeah, so anyway, you know, you can fit PD into your life by doing exchanges, you know, usually 4 manual exchanges, you know, breakfast time, lunch time, dinner time, bedtime, and each one takes half an hour or so, but you can do other things once you're connected, and there's no machine to worry about, and, you know, you can kind of take that with you. It's somewhat portable, you know, or use a cycler machine at night, but as you said, also do some exchanges during the day if that's necessary. And then there's 5 different ways to do hemo.
I just want to mention, too, what I really liked about PD is I had trouble with vascular accesses because I was so small. Mm-hmm. And having the PD catheter really saved my life, because if I had to go those next 9 years relying on vascular access sites, I don't think I would be here today.
You might have run out of sites.
In 3 years when I was younger, they used, well, my upper right leg, all my arms. I mean, it was, you know, precarious. And so I think people need to understand, too, PD, one of the benefits I find is that there's no blood involved and there's no needle sticks. And that's a benefit people need to understand, because I would do an exchange in the car. I mean, I would take it with me and I would clean up and put a little chuck down and connect and heat it up in the dash, the bag. I mean, these are things you do to go live your life and stay well. So just that little tidbit about PD, because I'm very much an advocate of peritoneal dialysis.
Oh, absolutely. And it's such a great first treatment. You know, it's easy to learn. It's easy to do. It's gentle. It protects residual kidney function better than a lot of the other options do. It removes protein-bound wastes, which at this point I don't think any other option can do. So there are some real benefits to it, and definitely no needles is a big one.
Yes. So tell us a little bit about the hemodialysis treatment options.
Yeah, well, so with PD, the membrane that's used to clean the toxins and the water out of the blood is one you've already got. It's your peritoneum. It lines your, you know, the cavity, your abdominal cavity, the inside of it and the outside of all your organs, and it's already there. With hemodialysis, instead of using a filter you've already got, it uses an external filter. And so blood has to come out of your body, pass through the filter, be monitored in all sorts of ways by a machine, and then go back into your body. And it gets out of your body with a needle, and it gets back into your body with another needle, or a catheter, which is not the best way to go because of the infection risk. But most people do not have any idea that there's five different ways to do chemo. You know, most people only know that you can go to a center 3 times a week, and you can get 3.5 or 4 hours of treatment. And you might feel pretty worn out, washed out, tired, hit by a truck sometimes after those treatments. And if that water is not removed gently enough, it's pretty common to have cramps, to get lightheaded, to have headaches. You know, there are a lot of symptoms, and that, I think, is one of the reasons that people are scared about the idea of doing home hemo, because they think, well, you know, there's staff here, there's a nurse here. What happens if I crash at home and there's no nurse? What's going to happen? And what they don't understand is it almost never happens at home, because at home, the treatment that you do is completely different. It's either more frequent, you know, more days a week and maybe treatments that aren't as long, or it can be more days a week with treatments that are much longer, like overnight, like with Cycler PD, you can do nocturnal hemo. And so in the center, there are some centers, not too many at this point, but there are a few, I don't know, 150 or so, I think is the last number I saw, that will dialyze people 3 nights a week in the center. So you go in, and instead of just getting 4 hours of treatment, you get 8 hours, and you go in, you know, in the evening, and you kind of sleep in the chair with, like, a lot of other people who are doing that, and they dim the lights, and they try to be quiet and whisper and not wake you up, and I think people don't sleep all that great, but they get twice the dialysis, and they get it much more slowly and gently, and they get it at night while they're sleeping, and they can get up in the morning and go to work because they feel great,
right.
And that's a huge difference, and they can have more to eat, more to drink, and, you know, they can be more active. So in center, there's actually 2 different ways, and then at home, there's 3. So at home, people can do the standard treatment of, you know, every other day or 3 times a week, 4 or 5 hours. But then they can also do short daily treatments where they might do 5 or 6 days a week and do, you know, 2, 3, 4 hours at a time. Or they can do it at night while they sleep at home. So that's 7 different ways altogether, 2 PD ways and 5 hemo ways, and most people are only ever told about 2.
Well, and I was on home hemo for a short time, and about 9 months, and it was because they didn't want me to go back on PD before my last transplant, because I had had so many kidneys and so much stuff going on in my abdomen area, and I'm small, that they didn't want to add PD fluid when they were trying to actively transplant me, because luckily I had living donors come forward. And so I had to go on home hemo. I decided to go on home hemo. And one of the really benefits of it was when I would go to the dialysis unit, which I did go in center, you know, the chairs were sometimes uncomfortable, or just people were annoying, or, you know, I didn't like all the different, you know, TV stations that I could hear, or
people are coughing and sneezing.
Exactly.
And you don't want to get sick when you're waiting for a transplant.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of things I couldn't control, and I'm somebody who likes to be in control. And I could dialyze at home, TiVo my favorite TV shows, and dialyze with my dog on my lap. And then people would come, and it's amazing how many people I'd visit me when they knew I was on dialysis. Like, oh, Lori's going to be tethered to something for a while. We can actually catch her and visit.
I know.
It was really funny. Like, people would come over because I'm like, yeah, I'm doing dialysis about this time. Come on over. And it was amazing how many people I saw that, I mean, wanted to visit me because it was interesting. And then it was also an educational because I was teaching them about the machine. But it was, what are some of the risks of home? Because I know for myself, you know, I had peritonitis. It's painful, but I would, you know, take that over, you know, I'd still take about a peritonitis. I was okay. I got through it. So that's one of the risks. But for home hemo, what are some of the risks that people may encounter?
You know, the biggest challenges that people seem to have, some of them are their machine issues, like alarms. You know, oh my God, what's a red number 36? Or, okay, I'm making that number up, so nobody, you know, quote me on that. But, you know, what does this mean? Or I can't make the machine work the way it's supposed to. And the machine companies, you can call them 24 hours a day, and you can say, oh my God, I have a red 36, what do I do? So there's somebody there at the other end of the phone. And then the other issues that I tend to hear a lot are things like, I cannot get the needle in right, it just won't go, or it hurts, or there's a clot, you know, what do I do? And that's an issue where you would call the nurse. And the nurse, your clinic should have a nurse 24 hours a day so that if you're, say, dialyzing at night and you run into a problem, you can call and you can say, you know, okay, what should I do here? And sometimes the answer is just, you know what, how about you come in tomorrow, we'll talk about it, and just wrap it up for tonight, and that's okay. Because when you're not only relying on getting 3 treatments a week, you can be a little flexible. You don't have to do the exact same days and times every single time you do it. And sometimes it's easier to just bag it and start over fresh the next day, or, you know, get in and have your access looked at. You know, the biggest risk, the thing that people worry about the most is, you know, what if a needle pulls out? You know, what if I'm sleeping at night and, you know, the lines come apart, something like that. That's very normal to be worried about, and there are precautions that you learn how to take during training, you know, things like having an alarm, maybe an alarm under, obviously an alarm near your access in your arm, but also one underneath the dialyzer, because a dialyzer can rupture. It's rare, but it has happened, and you can lose a lot of blood if a dialyzer ruptures. So that sort of emergency is what scares people the most. The thing is, in a clinic, that blood flow rate, when that blood pump is turning, it may be 400 or 450. They run very high in clinics. And that means that in 1 minute, you can lose almost half a liter of blood. At home, at night, while people are sleeping, they usually run half that. And that means you've got twice the time to react before, you know, anything really becomes dangerous.
Well, is it important to have a care partner with home hemo? With PD, that's not a requirement, and I don't know anybody that has a care partner unless they need assistance with their health. What about home hemo?
That is a great question, and different countries really do that differently. I mean, I can tell you that, like, in Australia and New Zealand and Denmark, if you want to do home hemo, you cannot have a care partner. That dialysis is your job. You need to know how to do it. You need to understand the treatment. You need to know how to problem solve and troubleshoot, and it's your baby. And if you can't do it, you know, without help, then you can't do it at home. In the U.S., it's been very much the opposite. For a very long time, it was like, you can only go home if you have a partner. And that changed a couple years, almost 2 years ago. The FDA approved the NxStage machine for solo home dialysis while someone is awake. So, you know, they don't want you doing nocturnal home hemo without a partner, just, you know, in case something does go wrong. But, you know, and I wouldn't necessarily say that that's for everybody. You know, if you, say, tend to be extremely anxious, that might not be a great fit for you. But there are plenty of, you know, adults who like control and stay calm and are able to learn and able to use their hands and able to see what they need to see. and they do great doing solo home hemo. So today, everybody doesn't need a partner. For nocturnal at this point, a partner is still required.
And tell us a little bit about, well, I think there's two other things, and we could probably speak for an hour on this topic because it's so important.
Maybe two.
Two, I know. There's just so much. But can you talk a little bit about the requirements that you need at home if you do home dialysis?
Yeah, there is sort of an assumption that you need to have a big house, you know, like a castle would be excellent, you know. And the reality is most of us don't live in castles. And I've visited lots of homes of folks who do home dialysis, and some of the rooms that they dialyze in are teensy. You know, like we have a room, my house has three bedrooms. I would actually call it two and a half because one of them is so small, we literally call it the cell. It's like 7 by 9, you know. It's tiny. By the time you put a bed in there, there's like no room for anything else. My daughter uses it as a closet. But I have seen people successfully do home hemodialysis in rooms that small. So you don't necessarily need a big room. You need less space and storage space for home hemo than you do for PD, because PD just at this point still has a lot of bags. So they're working on that. There's technology coming that will make the PD fluid on site, so you don't have to have all that storage. You know, but for right now, home hemo uses less storage space, and you know, you need a room where you can fit a chair and a dresser, and it's great if you have a closet where you can put things, or maybe people store them in bins under the bed, and people get really creative about how they make the space work. But you don't necessarily need a big house. And you don't necessarily need, you know, a sterile house. That's another misconception that I hear a lot. Like, oh my God, you know, the clinic is much cleaner than my house. I'm like, yeah, that's rarely true because there's so many different people in there coughing and sneezing and bleeding, and there's a lot of germs in clinics.
Right.
You know, and they try. They clean everything all the time, but, you know, I mean, they're starting with a lot more germs. The germs in your house are germs that you're used to, so, you know, it's a
little
less of a problem. That said, hoarding, not a good situation. Animal hoarding in particular, you know, if you have 27 dogs and 42 cats and, you know, none of the bathrooms work, home hemo is, or PD for that matter, is not going to work for you. You know, you got to have some kind of basic
hygienic ability to wipe up and clean the dishes. And
absolutely.
Exactly.
Yes.
I mean, and when I was on PD in home hemo, I was able to have, when I was on PD, I had a little tiny storage unit. I live in California, so it didn't matter. Because I lived in that studio, there was no room. I had a little back patio, and I had a little storage room that held all my PD supplies. And when I was on home hemo, I had a little section where I actually have a front porch. And luckily, I've lived in California, and the people who delivered them were so happy. You just want me to put it there? and so, you know, but people deliver it. I want to touch upon two things before we wrap up with home hemo. And one is needle sticks, because you have to cannulate yourself because a catheter is not ideal to have for a long time because the highest rate of infection and the highest rate of mortality. And the second thing is pets, because I'm a huge animal lover. I have dogs, cats, birds, and it's never been a problem. And I get very angry when people say, you got to get rid of your animals. That is not true. Email me I will send you links. I will send you links. Do not give up your animals. That's what you get out of bed for in the morning. But
absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about self-cannulation, and then we'll kind of wrap up the steps to get started if you want to learn more about it.
Absolutely. So there is no doubt that needles are scary. Nobody likes them. Well, almost nobody. I'm sure there's probably a person or two with many piercings who really likes them, but very few people like them. A lot of people are scared of them, and that's very normal. But it's also possible to overcome that. And I know that seems hard to believe when, you know, they're so scary, but there is something called desensitization therapy. Medicare even pays for it. And Stuart Mott, actually, on our Home Dialysis Central website, just this last week, we posted 6 new videos of, and they're all short, you know, they're all like a minute, minute and a half, but of different ways to sort of get over needle fear and get past it. And he actually shows you, which is great, and he's a cannulation expert. So it is possible to do it, and the thing to keep in mind is what you want your life to look like, and whether you want to allow fear to keep you from things like traveling or having a baby or getting a job or, you know, whatever it is that really matters to you. You know, is that a barrier in your way? Absolutely. Can you overcome it? Yes.
And, you know, it's important because I had a friend, Julie, who just was exactly what you described, and she overcame it. And she now had to go back and center. She was on home hemo, but some things happened where she had to go back and center. She had some other illnesses arise, and she still self-cannulates herself because she knows she wants to be in control, and it's just it's better for your access if you can learn how to do it. And I think that, you know, one of the things that's so important that if people are who are listening, if and you made it to the end of the show, bravo, you are a top educator, advocate, and I'm sure you're one of the people that read stuff before you ask questions online, right? That was, we were talking about that a little earlier. We get, you know, the same question over and over again, and nobody types
Google
in Google.
Google is your friend, people.
Yeah, Google something just to get a little basis of information from credible sites before you post a question. It'll help us all. But if I want to start home dialysis, what would be the steps that I would take? Like, I've heard this interview, I'm interested in, I go to my doctor, I go to my facilities. What kind of response or what do I do?
That is a great question. And the reality is not every clinic offers home therapies. And even though Medicare grants folks the right to be told about every option and where to get it, and that's been true for the last 10 years, it still doesn't always happen. So the important thing to know is that whatever clinic you're going to, there are other clinics. There are more than 6,000 clinics in this country. If your clinic doesn't offer the option that you decide you're interested in, then what you may need to do is you can talk to your doctor. In some cases, you might have to change doctors. But there's another clinic. Check with your insurance. Make sure before you switch clinics that your insurance pays for whichever clinic you go to, because people have been unhappily surprised when they didn't do that checking first. And you can call the clinic that you're interested in. You can ask to talk to the home training nurse. Generally, there's going to be some amount of a wait before they can get you in to train, because there's only so many nurses and so many training slots. So, you know, it may not happen instantly. But if it's something that you want to make happen, you can make it happen. On the Home Dialysis Central website, we have a database of programs. It's called Find a Clinic, and it's not perfectly up to date. I'm sure there are clinics that are unfortunately not in there, although we're trying really hard. But it's a place to start. And you can always call us up. We will do our best to help match you up with a clinic if this is a thing you want to do.
And also, I know the large providers are really trying to push home dialysis. And so perhaps you can go to your own clinic or your own administrator and say, hey, is there a facility in the area that's offering these treatment options? And they
Absolutely.
May be able to just switch you, and you don't have to switch insurance.
Yep.
And, you know, get you into training, because it is, and it doesn't happen overnight. You might have to have surgery if you want to have PD. But I also think it's important that if you try home dialysis and you don't like it, you can go back to whatever treatment you previously have or didn't have. You can change your mind. It's not something that's set in stone forever.
Exactly. And that's true. As you live your life, your values might change, your priorities might change, what you want to be able to do may change, and you can change treatments at any time from one to another to get something that fits you right now.
And I don't know if you've seen this story, but the benefits of home dialysis for me were, I think I was much healthier. I had a better appetite. And when anybody says, I don't have an appetite, that is a red flag for me that you may need more dialysis.
Because I agree 100%.
You know, because it's so important to have an appetite, because appetite drives your albumin and keeps you from infection and losing body mass.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so people who are nauseated a lot, I conclude that they need to be checked because they might not have enough dialysis. And I think people think, oh, dialysis is making me sick. No, the fact that you're not getting enough dialysis is making you sick. And exactly. I think they forget that point. Also, I think overall, I had better phosphorus management. I, you know, could eat cheese sandwiches and not worried about, you know, having phosphorus off, you know, like was crazy. And as you're a kid, there's a lot of pizza around and stuff like that. So it really did help me stay healthy. And I, looking back, I didn't kind of, I took that for granted. But I think people need to really understand the health benefits of choosing to be at home and in control of your own care.
Right. And it makes transplant more likely, too. There are studies that find that people who do PD or people who do home hemo are more likely to get on the transplant list and more likely to get a transplant. And, you know, because you're proving to a transplant program that you can take care of yourself, that you take initiative, you know, that you own this and, you know, you're self-managing.
And I also think that, you know, when you're home, and for me, I didn't get sick because I wasn't around a lot of people who were sick. And when you get called for a transplant, if you have any sickness, if you have a sniffle, you're not getting the transplant. And so,
I know, and that's so heartbreaking to get a call and to not be able to get it because you're sick.
You're sick, exactly. So, well, Dori, thank you so much for your expertise of this topic. You're a real champion of it, and I know a lot of people are indebted to your knowledge because you've changed their life. So can you please give us your website so people can check it out and learn more and be their own advocate?
Absolutely. And I think a great place to start would be homedialysis.org, which is our Home Dialysis Central website. And then that decision tool that I mentioned is mydialysischoice.org.
Sounds good. Well, thank you for your great work.
Thank you for yours.
Thanks for listening to Kidney Talk, a program of Renal Support Network. Please make sure to find us on Facebook or sign up for our newsletter at rsnhope.org. Kidney Talk is intended for informational purposes only. It is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment from your physician. Always seek the advice of your own healthcare provider regarding your medical condition.